Oh, listeners, this brings back all kinds of memories of my childhood. The book we're going to be talking about is German Heritage Baking, and we're going to be talking to the author, Heidrun Metzler, who's basking in the warmth of Hawaii as we speak, as we freeze our buns off. Talk about baking. I read your book, Audrey, and you can tell you have a scientific bent of mind, don't you?
Oh, thank
I mean,
you.
you're so, and you're German, and you're so thorough. I mean, I think people who are afraid of baking should get this book and have it all spelled out for them. You cover everything in detail.
Yes, I wanted to write a book that would reintroduce recipes that may have gotten forgotten, and especially in the U.S., I felt like bakers didn't have a lot of the basics from the questions that I got from my friends. And I think people move, when my son, I had a really hard time when my son turned 18 and they left. They just left to go to another state, to college. And, in Germany, everybody kind of stays together. You go to college close by. And then you're kind of out of touch. So if somebody wants to learn how to bake from their mother or grandmother, it's going to be hard if they get an interest, later in life.
Yeah. And you were born and grew up in Germany. In what city? What town was it? It sounded so romantic and it's an old town, right? Village, town, which?
Yeah, at the time it was a small village, and we were about 25 minutes from Frankfurt. And now, when I go back, it all kind of grew together. We're in the suburbs of Frankfurt now, and it's
Right.
very busy. But back then it was very nice, and I spent a lot of times in the woods. My dad had a his hobby was to take care of a portion of the forest and the acreage of the farmers. And I won't get into all of that, but basically he was caretaking it, and then hunting in the during hunting seasons, which are very strict, and it's very strict what you can hunt and what you can shoot. And but in the wintertime there was no hunting, and we would go feed to the animals. And I always loved being in the woods. And we had hazelnut bushes grow in the woods and blueberries in the
Yeah,
summertime, and
I loved
it
your
was.
comments on hazelnuts. I happen to love hazelnuts, but I can't stand having to peel them.
Oh, to peel? I don't peel them. You just grind them up.
That is what you do. So
Yeah.
now you learned at an early age from your mother, your grandmother, and your aunt, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Now, were these relatives of that generation precise? I mean, I tried getting recipes for my grandmother, and it was hopeless.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of what my grandmother was like too. My mother and my aunt, they had actually recipes. And my mom would, and I do the same thing. She would write down what she does, and if she has a recipe and she changes it and she gets creative with it, she writes it all down. And so that's what I've been doing over the years. But yeah, you're right. My grandmother, oh yeah, I just have that in my wrist, she would say, or I have that in my feeling, we say in Germany, and she just threw it together. And I just recently had a conversation with my mother about it, and she said, yeah, it always turned out. She just threw things together, and it always turned out.
I think my grandmother thought I was kind of a little lame in the head because I kept asking her, well, how long do you do this and how much do you use? And her answers were things like, until it's done, or just so it's enough.
Until it's done. Yeah, one time I was about 10 years old, and my parents were out of town, and my grandmother was taking care of us, and we were watching TV. You know, we had very little TV back then, and Lassie and Bonanza were the big shows that came from America that we watched, and I had this, you know, it was Sunday and there was no cake, and I said, I'm going to go downstairs in the kitchen and find my mom's recipe book and make this crust. We call it a bottom because you can put any kind of fruit you want on top, and then you put a glaze over it. And, you know, you can serve it with whipped cream or without, it doesn't matter. And so I make this crust, and I had overheard my aunt and my mom saying that a cake bakes about an hour. So I went back upstairs and watched Lassie, and all of a sudden I get this smell, and I was like,
Oh
Grandma,
no.
how long do you bake a bottom? And she said, oh, about 25, 30 minutes. So I ran down the stairs and opened this oven, and all this smoke came out, and I had made charcoal. It was
Oh
crazy. And I said, okay, forget it. Threw it out, made another one, and then, you know, we had a nice strawberry cake after that. But my mom had a fit when she came home about her condition in her kitchen.
Yeah, I'll bet. Now, you did something else before you actually got involved with writing a baking book. And what is that, your profession?
Oh, I was in Germany. I was a kindergarten teacher, and basically it's called, I have a degree in pedagogy, which
That's
is,
what I
you know,
didn't know. That's
yeah,
what it
it's
is. Cooking. I mean, teaching. Teaching.
teaching. Yeah, it's
Yeah.
basically
Okay.
everything that involves
Well,
teaching,
that's what this
homemaking.
book is going to, listeners, it's going to teach you how to bake. I mean, it's really amazing that, I mean, I didn't even understand what I didn't know until I read your explanations of how to do things. But you're so
Yeah.
precise.
Yeah, I was
I love
trying
your
to.
I loved your four crucial variables in baking, because I would never, I mean, I would know about how to measure flour, but all the other things I would never have crossed my mind, such as variations in liquid absorption from a flour. I have no idea,
Yeah,
but you
well,
have all this
it's big.
down.
Yeah, and the liquid absorption, it is because in America here in the US, they don't have standardization how to mill the flour and what is baking flour and what is cake flour and what is this flour. So in Germany, we have a system where they tell you what you can mill, like they take the grain and then they take all the outside off, so you only have the white, and then they mill the cake flour or the all-purpose flour. It's called 405 flour, and everyone knows that's how it's milled and that's how all the vendors mill it. But in the
Yeah, see,
States,
I thought I
everyone just
never even knew about that, and I never realized that what a mess up you could make without having that information on your flour. And you go in to explain all of that and what you can do to adjust it. And then basically you're covering adjusting all kinds of deficits in how we've learned how to bake, right?
I wrote the book with my son in mind. He was the basic force in getting me to finish this book that I've been dabbling in for decades. And so I finally, you know, went, and it took me a while. I interviewed several editors and finally found one that helped me with what I wanted is to have my directions condensed because they were very long, but I didn't want to lose any of the important things, and she helped me with that. And so we've been working together for the last 7 years, and I
Oh,
just
wow.
thinking about, you know, that generation, like the end of 20s
into
the 40s.
How many people know how to adjust an oven rack placement? I mean, how important? And yet, I don't think anybody really does it.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought they did, but yeah, so that's the other thing. Ovens bake differently, and even like my son, he has his old oven, and he's refusing to buy a new one. And so he said, Mom, the bottom came out a little bit darker on this one. And I said, well, you know, it's your oven, but try to lift it a little bit. Like if you have these five rack things, then you have a lot of options, and you can lift it. It kind of lifts it by half a rack, rather than when you have three racks, you know, then you can't really lift it to the upper rack. That doesn't work. But and you can put a cookie sheet underneath to deflect the heat. So yeah, he's been baking, and he's been taking them to friends, and he's really happy that he has support.
Oh, good. That's good.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, the thing that I found amazing was that even with all of these strictures on measurement and temperature and fiddling with all those little details, you managed to get creativity into these recipes. And my read on it is, you're just not afraid. You're secure enough in what you know about baking that you're not afraid to vary the process and insert your own ideas. Is that correct?
Yeah, I do that. And, you know, I don't mind. I mean, usually it comes out no matter what, but I also don't change a whole lot at one time. I change small amounts and try it out. And even if it doesn't turn out, then I'll just make another one. It's sort of like cooking, you know, when you cook and you make your roast for the first time, it might come out dry, and then you realize, oh, I have to not cook it as long. Or, you know, it's basically the same thing. It's just there are not a lot of people baking, but there are more people cooking. But I give a lot of tips, and we talked about where to put the tips, and I said, no, I want the tips. When you bake, you ought to be able to read the tips. I don't want them at the bottom.
Yeah, you have that integrated.
You integrated
the tips and tricks into the recipe directions, which I think is very helpful.
Yeah, and it's right there. You don't have a full of batter, and then you have to change a page. And also I have QR codes in there that go to videos that help you see what I'm talking about. And and that was important. That was my son's idea. And luckily, my designer did know how to do that. So
yeah.
We had, even though I self-published, I read about how to do it, how the professionals do it. If I had a publishing house, what would they do? So I hired my chief editor, and then after we got done, we hired a proofreader, and then I had to have an indexer because no one.
Oh yeah, those
indexer. It's a separate thing. I didn't realize.
The indexer is a real pain. I know. I did a cookbook. It was a nuisance doing the index. Now, about the actual recipes, now some of them I was surprised to see, because these are supposed to be old established German pastries, I mean, or bake things. And yet some of these that appeared seemingly out of nowhere. Is it just because you happen to like them? Like, I'm trying to think of what the one that threw me for a loop. I was surprised. By the way, I just now leafed through. I love this, your whole thing on the houses.
The gingerbread house?
the gingerbread houses. We had a neighbor always sponsored a party for the neighborhood kids, and she had some old molds, baking bowl, for baking cakes, and she would make a cake for each of the little kids involved in this party. And she would set it up. Oh, yeah, it was a lot of work. I mean, she's like that, but she will do anything like that. It was a lot of work. But she would set it up on its little tray, and then she would have all the different things you could use to decorate your house and little dishes all around. And the kids got
and
so...
And the candies, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All anything you could do to dress up your house. And it was more fun.
Yeah, that's what I usually do. I made one every year for the kids, and I get it all ready, put it together, and once it's dry, then I buy all these candies, and I just let them go to town, you know?
Yeah,
they,
that's what
they make
loved
interesting
it.
Designs, you know?
Yeah. Now, you have a lot of recipes for brownies. Now,
yeah, that's probably
I thought brownies.
About.
You what? I thought brownies
what
were an American
about,
thing.
Yeah, they are. They are.
Because my mother-in-law, who was English, she couldn't get over. She had a sweet tooth beyond belief, but she loved it because my mother would load her up with brownies, and she had never had brownies like that.
I know. I'm the same way. I was like, oh, my God. So I have a couple of recipes, and I, of course, I, you know, tweak them. And I like baking with liqueurs. So one of them is a coffee liqueur brownie, and the other one is nut brownie, a regular nut brownie. And then I have a candied ginger brownie, and the candied ginger brownie is a combination of a similar chocolate, you know, you put it on a sheet, and then
uh-huh.
you spread out the dough, and then you cut them in squares. It's kind of similar, but they're drier. So I thought, well, maybe I can combine these two, and so I came up with this recipe, and I tell you what, if I make this, I have to put it all in little baggies and freeze it so it's out of my sight because I can't stop eating them.
Oh, well, here's the one that surprised me. Here you have all these German pastries and sweets, and then I hit on a recipe for tiramisu. Now,
yeah,
how did that get in there?
Well, tiramisu, you know, I traveled when I was a kid and with my parents. Every summer we went down to France. And we stayed there for about 3 to 4 weeks and camped. Back then, the campgrounds were still right on the beach.
Wow.
And so I was exposed to some French recipes, and I have a tartatin in there, the upside-down apple cake from France.
Uh-huh.
I added that one. And then the tiramisu, you know, sometimes we would, on the way home, we'd go to Italy or, you know, stop in Austria or whatever. But, yeah, so that's how the tiramisu got in there.
Yeah, but I mean, you do everything from scratch. You didn't buy it. I mean, when I make tiramisu, I buy the lady fingers instead of making them myself.
I mean, you can get those nice little lady fingers, right, and do it with them there from the store.
Uh-huh.
I also have a recipe in there how to make your own. It's actually not that hard. But, yeah, there wasn't really enough recipes in there to call it European baking, you know, so
I just stuck with
the German baking. But I have anecdotes over the recipes, and you can kind of read about why I did the tiramisu.
Uh-huh. Well, I never realized that sponge cakes were really so essential to heritage baking.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a lot of good recommendations on sponge cakes.
Yeah. And sponge cakes, of course, are made without butter. It's just the egg yolk and the sugar, and then you got to whip the egg whites separately. And what you do is you get the egg yolks and the sugar all creamy so the sugar dissolves and it fluffs up. Then you put your whipped egg whites over it, and then you sift the flour over it, and you take a wire whisk, and it's called folding it together.
Yes.
And some people may not be familiar with that term, but it's basically you make a circle. Do you imagine making a circle with your hand? So you go to the bottom and you pull it up through the egg white and the flour, and everything gets mixed that way, and you keep the air bubbles in the whipped egg whites. That's the main thing. If you start stirring it, you lose all the fluff, you know.
Yeah. Now, you devote a lot of words to, I'm going to say it wrong, I know, is morbitesh, which basically is what? Tell us.
What is it?
I'm not pronouncing it right. It's Murbeteige.
Oh, Murbeteig.
Yeah.
Yeah, Murbeteig is basically a short crust that we add an egg to and a little bit of baking powder. And so when you have a short crust like the English make, it's a little bit more crunchy. And the Murbeteig that we make, or the short crust that we make, it's a little bit more. I always compare it to if you ever have done grout and you have to mix up the grout for laying your tile,
Yes.
the consistency of the grout, that's called it's mürbe. And teig just means
Oh.
dough. It means dough. So it's mürbeteig, mürbe dough. And there isn't really a word to describe it other than, you know, delicate, crumbly, but it's still moist. So it's hard to explain, but that's basically mürbeteig, and it's easy to make it. I always make it on my slab of granite that I have, or marble slab, I think, and I have a metal plate, metal, you know, baking blade that you chop. So I have a certain way that I developed of making the butter into small pieces fast, because that is always the pain about making a short crust, getting the butter in there. So I take the stick of butter and I slice it down lengthwise, like 3 or 4 times. And then you dip each part in the flour, you stack it back up, you turn it over, and then you cut it again. And now you have square strips. And then you put that back together and hold it. And then you chop like 1/4-inch pieces off the stick. And then you have already 1/4-inch little pieces everywhere. You distribute them over your flour, and then you chop, chop, chop with your blade. Till they are smaller, and then you use your hands and finish it up. And it goes really quick. And the main thing about this dough, you want to have all ingredients cold when you start, and you want to work fast so your hands don't warm up. They don't warm up the dough. If they do, then you can put it in the refrigerator for about 10 minutes and then work again. But most of the time, I can finish it, you know, within 5 minutes, and then it has to rest for 30 minutes in the fridge. And so while it's resting, you make your filling, and then you're already ready to go. You press it into your pan, put your filling in. If it has a top, you can do a lattice or an entire top. I have one, our German apple cake that we have is very tall, the covered apple pie.
Yes.
And it's very tall, and it has a full cover. It doesn't have lattice, it has a full cover. And then you take powdered sugar and a little bit of lemon juice and rum or water. You can, if you don't like the rum, you can do the water. And then it's a pretty thick paste, and you put it over it, and it's really good together. It's one of my favorite cakes. I mean, it's like really apple pie, but it's just there are currants in there and almonds in there, and it's just this, oh, you just get this mouthful of juicy apples, and it's really good. You can
Look, you
serve
really
it with
enjoy your
whipped cream.
food. I can tell.
I do. I do. I do. My
You
husband
know,
always says he had to.
I've never made chores. And I had a friend when I living in the Midwest who was really deeply into Linzertort. And
Yeah, I
that
love
and
Linzertort.
Goldwasser. I mean, I don't know how much Goldwasser she made.
You mean the Kirschwasser?
I mean, not in that. I mean, I'm just talking about things, ingredients that she was really crazy about, and recipes that she was really crazy about. She was crazy about the perfect Linzertort, and I never dared even try it because it had to be so perfect. And then you said you'd like easy liqueurs, and she put the Goldwasser and everything. You know, the thing that the liqueur that has the little flakes with gold in it.
I don't know what, I don't do that. No, I use cherry brandy and pear brandy, which is called Kirsch is cherry and Wasser is water, so it's called Kirsch water, basically cherry water. But it's cherry brandy, and there is one place in Oregon that makes it like we do in Germany. So I always get it there when I'm traveling, or if somebody goes by there, I'm like, pick me up a bottle. But it goes, you can mix it with the jelly that goes in Linzertort if you want, and you can. It definitely goes in the Black Forest cake. The Black Forest cake is not a Black Forest cake unless it has the Kirschwasser in it, the cherry brandy. So that's, and I like almond liqueurs, chocolate liqueurs, and Grand Marnier. I love Grand Marnier. It's just
Oh
a
yeah, Grand Marnier. Do you have a
great,
little sip of that while you're making your dessert?
I think you caught me there.
Oh dear. And of course, it wouldn't be a German bakery book without a really large selection of cookies. I always think of cookies when I hear of German baked goods. It's a huge tradition, isn't it, in Germany?
Yeah, it is,
Cookies.
and especially around Christmas time, we bake for about a week before Christmas, and people visit each other mostly on. We have 2 days for Christmas. We do Christmas Eve. That's where we do our presents. Here it is in the morning of the 25th, but the 25th is a holiday, and so and the 26th also. So people visit each other, and you have to have cookies to offer. You
Oh,
cannot
that's
have
why.
Christmas cookies to offer. Yeah, so we usually make the cinnamon stars,
Yeah,
almond.
those you have recipes for those. They look good. Yeah, they
Yeah,
look
and the
actually
freckles.
like something I could make.
Yeah, the macaroons are super easy. They're super easy. It's just egg white. Beaten up egg white with powdered sugar, and then you put coconut in there, but not the sweetened coconut. You got to get the rasped coconut from the health food store. And the
Oh, really?
hazelnut macaroons is the same thing. You just grind the hazelnuts, and the hazelnut meal is actually pretty good to buy. The almond meal, they've gotten so funny with it. They don't, at least in Hawaii, I'm not able to find the almond meal anymore, which is a little bit coarser than the almond flour. So they're just
Oh, yeah.
selling almond flour, and I can't really use that for a lot of things. I can use it if I'm doing a gluten-free cake. I do the almond flour instead of regular flour, but I needed a little coarser to do the cookies, and
Well,
so I
can't you
grind
do
it
it like
myself.
in a processor? Can't you make it yourself?
Yeah, I do. I have an
Yeah.
attachment, and I grind up my own nuts. Yeah.
You know, the subtitle of your book is Time-Honored Recipes, Traditional Techniques, and Culinary Secrets. What do you think is the most important secret you include in your book?
I would say, one that I already mentioned, when you do your short crust, you have to have all ingredients cold when you start. When you do other things, well, some of the cookies you do too, they're essentially like a short crust type, some of the cookies. But if you do like pound cakes, for example, you always want all the ingredients at room temperature, because if you have, say, the butter at room temperature, and then you pull out the eggs from the refrigerator, then it's like a shock, and the butter gets this funny looking, like as if it has curdled, but it doesn't curdle. It just kind of bunches together, and then it's not smooth anymore. So what I do and my mother does is we take it out the night before when we know we want to make it the next day, and then it's really creamy, and even the milk, you should, like, one of my pound cakes has milk in it, and you could put it in the microwave for about maybe 15 seconds or something. That would bring it up to room temperature, probably. You wouldn't want to leave the milk out overnight. But if you do a cake, for example, at 10 and you're up in the morning early, you could take it out, and then it's also room temperature. Measuring the flour is a big deal,
Oh
so
yeah,
I.
you have a lot to say about that, and most bakers that I know have a lot to say about the two items that everybody who bakes talks about. The one of them is of course the flour measurement, and the other one is the temperature of your oven, because they're so different, one oven to the next. You don't speak a lot about that, do you?
Well, I just say, get to know your oven. And sometimes what you can do, you can get a cheap little thermometer that hangs on one of the racks.
Right.
And like, say you're moving into a new house and you don't know that oven, you can see if it actually heats to 350, that you put the dial on 350 and then see if it actually heats on it. Now, I had a issue. I lived in Oregon for a couple of months, and I was in a house that it had a very old oven. I think one of the heating elements was out or something, and we had a group that met regularly, and they had this idea that everybody puts in $2, and we're gonna go. We had a bookstore that they let us stay there in the evening and do our thing, and everybody puts $2 in to the bowl, and then we're gonna judge who has the best dinner, who has the best appetizer, who has the best dessert.
Oh, great.
And I thought, okay, I'm game. So I'm making this chocolate cherry almond cake, and I put it in the oven, and it's just not baking. And I, you know, and you're not supposed to open the oven, at least for the first 30 minutes the cake is in. Well,
Really?
I ended up moving it anyway because it was obviously not rising right. And so I did all kinds of things. I lowered it, I upped it, whatever, try to change the temperature. And then I'm like, good Lord, I'm so embarrassed. It was a little bit fallen in the very middle, just a little bit. And which is okay because it tastes a little bit like, like a sort of like a lava cake kind of thing.
Yeah.
And And
Oh,
I
great,
thought,
yeah.
I'm too embarrassed to tell them I'm writing a baking book. And so I just brought it in because I had nothing else. And she ends up going around with this cake and shows it to everyone. And I shook my head because thought she was asking me, "Do you want another piece?" And then she said, "We don't know who made this cake. This cake won."
Oh no, you won.
I said, "Oh, and I'm writing a baking book." So
Well,
anyway, that's
you
a short
certainly, I mean,
introduction.
for anybody who's shy about baking, I mean, this is a good place to start, listeners, because I mean, Hydrun Metzler holds your hand and gives you little tricks and tips throughout the book. It's called German Heritage Baking, and I think people following your tips will find the success really kind of stimulating and wonderful and encourage additional baking. You did good, Adrian.
Well, thank you. Well, that
Yeah.
was my goal to, help people relearn and be comfortable with baking and enjoy what they're baking. I mean, you really can't get these things in the store here. There aren't, there are some French bakeries and you get some good stuff there, but the variety I have is completely different and
You're
each one of
talking
them
about
has different
Hawaii.
tastes.
You're talking about Hawaii.
No, we don't have any of this kind of bakery here, but like I lived in Texas and there was Madeleine's, that little French, you don't have Madeleine's over on the East Coast.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah,
So, well,
it's
there are
like,
some
yeah.
from time to time. There are some good bakes. Actually, more now than like a few years ago. So let's hope it's a
Yeah.
trend that keeps up. Well, a good
Yeah, great.
much success with your book, and
Well, thank you
keep
so much,
baking.
Anne. Yeah, I am. Well, I
You
hope
must be
everyone enjoys
ready
it.
for the holidays now, and so keep baking. Okay, dear.
And I'm just selling it through my web page, so it goes
Yeah, but
directly to my printer distributor.
well, why don't you give us your address while you're at it then?
Okay, it's just my name, HeidrunMetzler.com. So the first name is spelled HEID as in Dora, RUN as in Nancy. And then the last name, Metzler, I think people probably know how to spell
Yeah.
that. It's Metzler.
Great. Well,
Yeah.
anyhow, and I probably would be lying if I told you I was going to bake my way through this because I don't bake
You should
at
try something easy. Make that coconut
Yeah.
macaroon.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, I
Yeah.
had a fail-proof recipe for pavlova when I was in Australia. Unfortunately, it doesn't translate to any other location because I found out it's a moisture issue. I mean, so it's very climate sensitive. I made one once, and my guest said it's the first time I ever had to use a steak knife on a dessert. It
Well,
was pretty awful.
did you need moisture, I mean humidity, or did you need
It's
dryness?
humidity is the issue. Yeah, I mean, it was
Oh,
just
okay. So
too
you make it
humid.
in the
Right.
summer in
So,
Pennsylvania.
anyhow,
Yeah.
have a wonderful holiday season, and yeah, say hello to all the wonderful plants and vegetables you find in Hawaii. And yeah,
Yeah, and the
so
fruit.
and have fun
Yeah.
and let us
Well,
know about your next book.
okay. Well, thank you so much, Anne. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Well, it was fun talking to you too. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.